Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Football Ramble Mailbag. Great rivalries, unpopular opinions and celeb supporters are the order of the day. It's Saturday, 2nd of March. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Andy Brassel.
Hello everybody, it's mailbag time. It's possibly my favourite time of the week.
It's your letters. Remember that?
I do remember that.
Of course he does. TFI Friday.
Yeah.
Couldn't get more Marcus Speller if you tried.
Reef.
It was Reef as well. Great 90s band. Still going, they are.
One question is all that matters here. Do you want me fucking shoes?
Ah, I'm a bit of Sean Ryder there.
Great stuff.
Yeah. That's Chris Evans offered the shoes.
Yeah that's right.
And then it caused a ruckus.
And then TFI was no longer live.
And television.
How would you explain why this is not live? How would you explain TFI Friday as a concept to some of our younger listeners?
It was just sort of a Friday late afternoon, early evening show to celebrate, welcoming in the weekend. It was a forerunner to the keys of the weekend.
It was actually.
Which I forgot to do yesterday, but it's on a timer, don't worry.
It's a pin.
Yeah.
Get Airbnb or email you. Don't worry about it. Oh, you will get a lot of stick on Twitter for not doing the keys, mate.
I know, yeah. Well, sometimes you've got to get a bit of stick to keep you on your toes.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say.
Have you got a key card to the weekend now?
Whatever you want, Andy, I've got it.
Yeah.
All the options are there. But today it is the mailbag. We're enjoying the weekend currently. And of course, if you want to get involved with the mailbag, you can tweet us on X at Football Ramble, message us on Instagram at Football Ramble, and of course, email us show@footballramble.com. And it is the emails where we begin, Luke Moore.
Well, I saw the Instagram DMs of the Ramble account a couple of days ago for the first time in ages. And if you want a question read, I wouldn't go through that because it is an absolute shit show in there. I would always personally prioritise the Discorders who pay to be on Patreon, which is patreon.com/footballramble. That's your first port of call.
Oh, yeah.
If you want your question read out, it's as simple as this. I'm going to make it very, very clear. If you want your question read out on this show. Pay us a fucking fiver, and then we'll think about it.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, Josh, who has emailed in, that's undermined it. He says, there's a lot of chat about the greatest rivalries in football. What are, in your opinion, the essential ingredients for a legendary rivalry? And does this weekend's Manchester derby meet your criteria? It's a good time for that question because Manchester derby, as Josh says, this weekend. Derbies are important, and the rivalry is a big part of the game that we all love. And actually, what's also interesting is the idea that, yes, we have historic derbies. Yes, we have things that we know to be derbies, like the Manchester derby. But there's always new little rivalries popping up all the time. You know, Liverpool versus Man City more recently for the titles.
Well, Liverpool-Chelsea.
Liverpool-Chelsea before that. So what are your guys' ideas about the essential ingredients for a legendary rivalry in football? And I'll come to you first, Marcus.
Yeah, I think that often we think of derbies as just local ones. But sometimes it's not always the local derby which is the most fierce. You know, Chelsea versus Fulham is a local derby, but I would probably say it's more fierce between Chelsea and Spurs.
This is better explained in European terms, isn't it? It's derby versus Classico, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, but yeah. Of course, but a derby, a rivalry is just, you know, it's an intense.
So Chelsea and Fulham.
I mean, that is a bit of it's a rare one. Chelsea versus Fulham. I don't think that is the. That's not an average.
Fulham have taken a player from Chelsea on loan, like in the last window, and it's not. And there's no animosity or anything like that.
No, nobody would think anything of it. So that is a bit of an odd one, I suppose. But to answer the question, the sort of the basic most important ingredient is an immense desire to beat them. Is the you have to have that, an immense desire
on both sides.
On both sides, absolutely right.
Another dig at Fulham there.
Oh, these days they hit the points.
Yeah,
we're both mid-table, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's what it is. Because as you say, you know, sometimes clubs will suggest that we're not too bothered by them. So is it really a really double? It's that immense desire to beat the other side. And we see that the odd derby that we talk about, Brighton versus Crystal Palace, you know, which kind of developed, I mean, look into it, but you know, it developed over a series of matches between the sides. It wasn't a local one. It wasn't because they were the best two teams in the land or a particular seismic event, perhaps. It was a series of things. But that is a huge rivalry now. When Brighton go to Palace or vice versa, it's far bigger than, say, you know, when Fulham rock up or something like that. So the immense desire to beat that team, when you look for that fixture and go, they're coming to town or we're going to them. It's an obvious and sort of a basic point, but that has to be there for a rivalry.
And it has to transcend like current form, and by a current form, I mean recent years. Because you touched on Manchester City versus Liverpool. To me, like, why that has been a rivalry of any sort is because they have been consistently the two best teams in the Premier League for a number of years.
So it's somewhat different,
but
maybe.
You don't feel that extra pinch. You know, the reason they want to get one over each other is because it's going to help you win the league.
Yeah.
And that can't be it. There needs to be more to it than that,
well, Andy,
doesn't there?
I mean, we often sort of talk about, we call it like the strange derby between Brighton and Palace. It's actually not really that strange if you think about it. It was a rivalry that built up over, as I say, a series of games. Because we just mentioned Liverpool-Chelsea. That was the same. But we don't refer to that as a bit, it's a bit of a weird derby. We understand it because it's happened. We've seen it develop where you have two teams. And maybe it is, you know, Mourinho taunting the Liverpool fans. Mm. Mourinho was loved by those Chelsea fans. The Liverpool fans go in on him, Chelsea fans respond, and suddenly it's created a thing. But I mean, I would say if you're talking really classic rivalries that will last and will always be there, you know, often it is to do geographically, but often history is there.
I've got three boxes you need to tick for it to be a classic rivalry.
Yeah.
That's local,
yep.
Historic, mm-hmm. and cultural.
So you presumably don't have to have all three because Real Madrid, Barcelona, is not local.
Well, fine. I think the best ones have all three. I think that, you know, a lot of water under the bridge is important. But if you had a philosophical difference in there, like Real Madrid versus Barcelona and the history that goes along that, maybe that makes up for a lack of local rivalry. But the best ones have all three, and that makes it even spicier. So Celtic v Rangers, you know, it's a local derby. Uh-huh. It's historic for all the obvious reasons. And culturally, it's very, very different as well, because you've got Protestant versus Catholic and all the rest of it. Now, that obviously throws up a load of unsavoury behaviour, but we can't deny the fact that culturally, it's a big element of the rivalry between them. And a lot of the big rivalries in world football can be about a worldview, like River versus Boca, for example.
Yeah.
Boca's seen as working class, River's seen as more kind of upper middle class, even though these days it's mostly bollocks. Sure. And actually, that was probably a bit of a fallacy because they both came out of working class neighbourhoods anyway, but it makes it more interesting.
It does. Yeah.
Bocca will criticise River for being the millionaires and all
that's the rest of it.
And River will criticise Bocca for the opposite. So all that stuff goes into the mix. When you've got all three, local, historic and cultural, it is spicier than ever.
Yeah, but the derbies, the best derbies definitely live beyond their origin points. I think that's fair to say, because Barcelona Real Madrid, that's a really good example for you know, you can talk about, you know, juxtaposed political philosophies, you know, Castilian versus Catalan.
Yeah. Mm.
But the fact is, since Barcelona and Real Madrid have become global concerns in the past 15 years, I think those things, the localness of it, and I'm saying, you know, within Spain rather than, you know, within
a
Europe.
City,
It's something that is actually massively unimportant and totally not understood or not cared about by a huge part of the global audience. You know, there are people who will be mad fans of Real Madrid and Barcelona in all different countries around the world who won't understand anything about the Catalan desire for independence or General Franco or any of those things. So it's weird. It's a rivalry that is still the same. It's still a huge match every time it's played. But because it's perceived on a global level, its origin point is almost like less in focus than ever before.
You're right to say that. You're absolutely right to say that. However, what I would say to perhaps, I don't know, maybe go into Luke's point more than that, is if all those fans around the world actually stopped supporting, it would still be an incredible derby for the reasons that history and so on and so forth. You know, the River Bocca stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that is not as, say, celebrated or as watched around the world just for a number of reasons.
Mm.
But it's still, you know, it's the super classico, for crying out loud. It's absolutely enormous. So you're right to point that out. You're definitely right to point that out. But I think a huge derby still, whether the wider world is involved or not, the derby still remains massive. You know, like, look at Portsmouth, Southampton. I mean, who outside those two places gives two shiny shites about that? Liverpool?
Everyone. How long have you got? Well, I mean, just before I answer that, because despite that's a barefaced dig that is beneath you, there is some interesting stuff in there.
It's my Saturday as well.
I just wanted to chuck into Peñarol versus Nacional. One of them is a team that's set up by English people who live there, English immigrants who live there. They're the one that's set up specifically in response to that, as for native kind of Uruguayans, and that's where the rivalry comes from. Mm. On the Portsmouth versus Southampton thing, and I think it applies to the Brighton versus Palace rivalry as well, actually, we can talk about this academically and start to assess it and use different examples. But ultimately, it really is for each individual fan base to decide what's a derby and what's a rivalry and what isn't. And Andy mentioned it.
But it is the fans that often dictate this.
Exactly. They should always do that. And Andy said, you know, what is the game that gives the fans the biggest pinch is exactly a different way of saying the same thing. You know, a lot of it is very localised. Mm. The fan base decides which games are most important to them. So actually, when you talk about Brighton Palace, which is a common one where people go, oh, it's a pointless derby, or it's this derby, it's that derby, and everyone laughs about it, that's fine. But it's actually nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
The fan base themselves, who watch this team every week, should rightly decide who the biggest rivalry is and why. And it may well be as big as Real Madrid Barcelona or Celtic against Rangers, but it can absolutely easily
be. That's life for you, isn't it? You attach meaning to whatever you want to attach
meaning
to.
But I think history through fixtures also as well, again, specific moments and when people remember them. I mean, the River Bocca is a great example for that, you know, with the incident. What was it calling them pigs once? I can't remember.
Chickens.
And all that kind of stuff. Oh, the other one in Mexico, is it Guadalajara, Chivas versus Club America, is that the derby? I really should remember that. But you've got the two big sides. And, you know, one of my favourite moments from the history of all these kind of like quirky derby happenings and so on was when the goalkeeper from one side, he was so bored because they were hammering them. He got someone to throw him a magazine from the crowd. So he was reading it. Of course, then they go away and they get hammered and magazines rain down on the keeper and all that kind of stuff. You know, glorious stuff. And I think also it's almost the humour, if you like, and the kind of, let's call it banter, between the two sides. They don't forget You know, they, with Penarol and Nacional, they were still chanting. You know, it was a result about 80 years ago where one of them hammered the other and they still chant about it. You know, those kind of things that's passed down the generations. That rivalry, you know, that desire to beat them is
that,
still
but
there.
But it's something that can give your club meaning as well, regardless of fluctuation.
Totally,
in
elevates
form
a
and
fixture.
Fortune. Yeah, I mean, as we're, you know, on Saturday today, 12:30 on this Saturday, so maybe just
as you're,
after
as you're listening
to this,
yeah.
or just afterwards, Wimbledon are playing MK today,
ooh. Right?
And I would say that, like, the feeling of whether that is a derby slash rivalry is very split amongst Wimbledon fans,
right?
Amongst MK fans, not so much, because, like, for example, like, there are lots of Wimbledon fans who would say, because of what happened, we want to beat them at all costs. Mm. We hate them. I would say, like, if we win 4-0 or we lose 4-0, our club still got nicked. And do you know what? We're better than you on every metric that apps actually counts. And I think most football fans would recognise that. But for them,
Kingstonian fans might.
It's absolutely massive. For them, it's absolutely massive because it's the only thing that gives them meaning.
Exactly.
It's the only thing that makes them anywhere near a proper football club.
Joking aside, Wimbledon have always had that moral high ground, that philosophical.
Yes. And you know what? Because of that, it actually reflects the way the derby slash rivalry, it affects the way those games between Wimbledon and MK go. Because you know what? I have no expectation of Wimbledon beating MK today because they turn up every time Milton Keynes and treat it like it's a derby. They play like everything, like their life depends on it.
Mm.
Whereas, because there's this fluctuation, and whatever football club you are, in whatever situation, you'll need to be pulling in the same direction. And because there's that kind of split in how Wimbledon fans feel about it, that's really reflected on the pitch. They always outplay us. They always beat us outside. Now, sometimes, a lot of times, that's because they've got better players and more money and all that sort of stuff. Though you would argue that's something that's maybe not paramount in a derby situation. But it's interesting, this week in the build-up to the fixture, because Wimbledon went there and lost in January, and a lot of Wimbledon fans are really outraged by it and said, look, I'm fed up of us getting beaten by them. And it's interesting that even in, we're talking about League Two here, the club have put forward players for interview this week to say, look, we really know how much this means to the club. And the captain, Jake Reeves, has come out and talked about it and go, yeah, we realise it's really important and we have to give everything. We have to win this. You know, a sense that there's got to be some sort of sea change. So, you know, does it become a proper rivalry derby at this point? And is that actually a good thing?
Well, we were saying that the fans kind of really decide on this.
It's interesting, really interesting.
Because
insight.
If the fans, it is, Andy.
Because it's unique. The source
unique.
Of it is almost unique.
Yeah.
Particularly English football.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that if the fans want the players to respond and say, no, we're the fans, we're going to be here, you know, for our lifetimes, players come and go. Actually, is it the club's duty to kind of go, you know what, we need to recognise this?
Yeah.
So I think the fans do kind of decide.
And the players buzz off it as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they showed again on Wimbledon social media this week. They showed an animation of, like, one of the few times actually that Wimbledon beat MK, and Lyle Taylor, former striker of ours, who's still very, very popular, plays for Cambridge now. There's of him scoring against MK and walking running off afterwards, and you've got the cameraman, photographer behind the goal, taking the film, and he's really playing up to it. He's pointing at his chest and pointing at the floor. He's going, "This is my fucking house," and people love him for that. People absolutely love him for that. And I think players who get it, they know to lean into it. They know how to work that emotional angle, don't they? And I think you know as a player that if you have a big performance or even a big moment in one of these games, you're kind of canonising yourself. It's an opportunity that you don't
Wayne
get.
Wayne Foster knows what you're talking about, Andy.
Mm.
Has a short story about him you know, Irvin Welsh and all that. Scored a goal against Hibs for Hearts in the Cup.
Yeah.
And he is immortalised among the Hearts fans, yet barely did a thing.
Yeah, I think that you can really kind of burnish your reputation for doing something in those kind of games.
Totally.
Just to come back very quickly to the Portsmouth-Southampton thing before we move on, there is a feeling, I think, not only that if you grew up supporting Portsmouth, you are you are really told from the very start that Southampton is, you know, their club is the enemy and that they are the worst and all the kind of stuff. But then there's some more kind of philosophical stuff that underpins it, which is that, you know, Portsmouth is a naval versus a commercial port. The sensibilities are very different. In my formative years, Southampton went through, were obviously a Premier League team and were very relatively successful compared to Portsmouth, but they're also quite a middle class team who were run by Rupert Lowe, and it was always quite a very nice posh thing. Whereas actually,
have you seen who's in the stands there though? It's really changed now.
Oh yeah, of course it is. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, exactly the same thing. Like, it's quite well to do, and obviously there are very large parts of Southampton which aren't well to do at all. But the sensibility of the club, it was almost. And I know this is not necessarily justifiable, but I can remember when Southampton had the new stadium built. There was a big feeling in Portsmouth, like, yeah, that never happened to us. Mm. We'd never get that.
Do you miss playing them more often?
Well, I've just been so far removed from the locality for so long now that it's not got the same buzz for me. But they are very different cities, and they are very kind of almost philosophically opposed.
It sounds a bit Newcastle-Sunderland, that, actually.
Maybe.
Because, like, Newcastle was really redeveloped during the 90s, and that never happened to Sunderland. Mm. And I think sometimes, as we said with Real Madrid, Barcelona, when you're outside the local context... Uh-huh. You can, like, some of the reasons why that rivalry is so intense can just fly over the top of your head.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Now, Michael on email, he says, "Hi, gents. What is one opinion you have relating to football that could be construed as unpopular or, dare I say, even controversial? Here's one for you. Dennis Bergkamp didn't mean to do the flick and turn against Newcastle. He was simply trying to roll the defender, took a poor touch, which ultimately took him through on goal. Happy to die on the Dutch fraud hill. Fight me." He says, to be fair, actually, I think Bergkamp has pretty much admitted that, didn't he?
He extrapolated this out to the fact that Bergkamp is a fraud, which is a bit of a big extrapolation from one move.
Well, I think that with the Bergkamp thing is, I'm pretty sure Bergkamp said he wasn't the touch.
I haven't seen that.
I'm quite sure if he hadn't forgiven, but I'm quite sure he said, you know, it wasn't the touch he wanted to do.
Isn't the whole point of it the impro?
Yes, exactly.
That's what makes it such a great goal.
Yeah,
no?
the touch goes off, but not panic, because I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll meet the ball. You know, where ultimately I want it, which is me facing the goalkeeper to score. And so, in a sense, it is the glorious and calm and beautiful response and technique to it that makes it
incredible. It's not his goal against Argentina.
That's fair to say. Look, it doesn't actually matter, does it? Does it matter? He still did it. I mean, he still did it.
Well, I think he's saying he's got... I mean, look...
It's not like it pinged off his shin, hit someone on the arse and went in. It was an amazing piece of skill.
Yeah.
It didn't quite happen as he wanted it, according to him, according to you. But it's still amazing.
Yeah, it's the response. I think that if you were to take, say, Ronaldinho's free kick against England, the more I've sort of looked at that, the more I think he's fluked. That he didn't mean that.
Mm.
And so I think you kind of go, well, that was a bit of a fluke, so he didn't mean that. Whereas Bergkamp doesn't mean the touch, but look at the response, because he manages to sort of swivel around the defense. Because he takes the bad touch and he thinks... In that split second, okay, the ball's going around that way, so I'll spin this way.
Do you want to hear the quote from Dennis?
Go on.
He says, the pass from Pires was slightly behind me and I was adjusting myself to the situation because I wanted to go through on goal with one touch. I touched the ball, but my body was already turning the other way, so it looked quite good. For many goals, players just decide at the last moment what they're going to do. That was the same with me. I'm glad it looked like that and that everyone is still talking about it today. So it's actually quite a non-committal answer, really.
Yeah, okay. Which he's saying he didn't, when the ball comes to him, he doesn't say, right, I'll flick it around that way and I'll go that way. The ball's gone that way and he's going that way and he's judged it and thought, right, okay, as it's happened, I'm going to collect the ball, which he does, and then finishes
very well. It's his unique appreciation of angles that allows him to readjust and score. Yeah.
And a lot of players do think completely instinctively, and it's very, like Jonathan Wilson talked about it quite a lot. And there's a big long read on one of his books where he says, actually, you can be wowed by the amazing quality and ability of a player on the pitch, and then you go to interview them and they can't really explain it. Yeah. It's actually really disappointing. Uh-huh. Like, I think he was talking about in context of the Wayne Rooney overhead kick against Man City. Rooney talked a bit about how he felt like time slowed down and he had these different options and he chose an option, but it was all instinctive. And he said, sometimes you expect players to be really very, very elaborate and very expressive on how they do these things. But actually, the reality is probably they don't even know. Yeah. It just happens.
And the fact is, they understand football on a
different plane.
Different level.
Yeah.
So why would they be able to explain it to us in a way that we could understand?
Exactly.
Well, it's just muscle memory sometimes. You do something because there's the ball, boom. You know?
Yeah. So to answer the question, do you want me to go first?
Go and have a go.
Yeah, that's what Michael wants. He wants your controversial opinion.
Wow. Is there any other opinion?
Or unpopular opinion?
Well, most of them are unpopular.
Go ahead.
So my unpopular opinion, I suppose, is that, and it might be because I'm instinctively against... In football, which is a world game and everyone loves it and it's accessible to all, and I think that's a really important part of it. I kind of philosophically believe that. So I'm against the kind of gatekeeping about things and snobbiness and the idea that you're not a proper fan if you do this and you're not a proper fan if you do that. I actually don't have a problem at all with half and half scarves.
I don't have a huge problem with it either.
Which people I'll get very animated about.
If you are making a pitch for me to give you the half and half Messi and Ronaldo scarf that I picked up at the Portugal Argentina friendly at Old Trafford for Christmas, I might be able to arrange that.
Okay,
for
well, that's an unintended great consequence of this. Here's the reasoning. So
it's horrendous.
I think I'm sure it is. There's gatekeeping that goes on with football. How long have you been supporting that team? How long have you been going to that game? Do you go to all the games? Do you do this? Do you do that? Which I personally find quite repulsive.
Don't you think that exists less?
Maybe, but here's the thing. If you're taking your kid to a game and it's his first game and he doesn't support either of the teams and you want a souvenir from the game, or you've come all the way from wherever and you want something to have a memento, get yourself a half and half scarf.
But
it's a great little souvenir.
But you've got the aura of people saying, well, why are you going to the game if you don't support any teams?
Well, tough shit. It's none of your business what I do.
I once saw someone in the press box at Benfica. There was this guy who used to work for Benfica, who was...
Is it Jorge Jesus?
Yeah, yeah. who was such an intense, in an administrative position, who was such an intense fan of Benfica, he couldn't stand any other club. And someone passed him, there was this guy, a journalist, who was working away. And it's one of those days in Lisbon where it was about March. I think it was in the Europa League against Espanyol. And it was at this Estadio de Luz. And it turned from very, very nice in the afternoon to really quite cold at night. And there was this journalist tapping away on his laptop. And he was shivering, like visibly shivering. One of the supporters passed him a Benfica Espanyol half and half scarf, and this guy in his Benfica blazer went down the stairs and snatched it off him, and he's like, no, not in here.
Blimey.
Wow, he's passionate.
Yeah, I think with half and half scarves, I understand the point that if you're a fan of a club, then, you know, say like a Fulham half and half Chelsea scarf, you know, West London derby, right? I wouldn't want the Chelsea badge and all that, or another club on the scarf.
No, I get it's like people who have like printed on the back of their shirt, "I ate Chelsea" or whatever.
I don't think people do that anymore, but yes, you're absolutely right.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Fat Fulham Dave wouldn't do that.
Big Fat Fulham Dave, he's there in the Putney end. But so therefore, it's not for me.
Yeah, it's not for you. That's the point.
And I think, and I understand that when people go, "It's not for you, let it be," and all the rest of it, sometimes that can just be a bit irritating, love. And I think there's some things shouldn't be for anybody. But
if you're a hardcore fan that goes home and away and you've supported them your whole life and you've got 15 Fulham tattoos, obviously you're not going to buy it.
No.
But it's not marketed at you.
Exactly, yeah. Mm. So I think that, yeah, you're right. It's a sort of a momentum for the day. I mean, I actually think that, say, with England friendlies, you know, someone gave me a half England Ghana scarf. I wasn't actually at the game, but I actually quite like that.
Yeah.
Because I that's a little bit different. So I think the half and half scarves don't really bother me that much.
But it taps into this mentality of that, you know, and you see it all over Twitter. You see people who've got like hashtag against modern football in their Twitter bios, and they're football's crap now. And first of all, they're normally about 25, so they don't remember anything other than modern football anyway. Mm. Secondly, they completely disregard everything that was terrible about old football, which is, i.e., the standard of the play, the pitches, poor safety in the stands, the fact that, you know, women and children didn't feel safe going there.
No, you know, half and half scarves.
All I'm saying is, there's loads of stuff about modern football that's actually pretty good.
Yeah, but
no one talks about it. And half scarves, they're fine.
Will you at least admit that football shirts were better when they smelt of asbestos?
Definitely.
Bloody hell.
They were,
I never know how people can wear football shirts out and about. You get so sweaty.
Yeah, but I would say, just to give an ounce of balance, I do think half and half scarves generally are a bit wanky. And I think that, you know, if you're supporting your team and you got one and a half and half scarf and your team and Manchester United, what then do you do with that? If you collected them, fine. That's why I think that there's a place. But it would just be a bit odd that, you know, again, say Fulham versus Brighton, you know, in the Premier League, I'm holding up a half Man United, half Fulham scarf. And we'd be like, we do with that.
It's just an occasional visitor item.
It's just a little souvenir from the game.
Yeah,
it's like by the programme. That's all it is.
I think they should be compulsory. Everyone should have to buy it.
Should be allowed unless you got one.
That's my controversial opinion. Any unpopular opinions yourself, Andy?
Well, I guess as people have got more and more annoyed with
the Tory
VAR.
Party. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
It's something that's maybe not that controversial anymore. I strongly feel that fans and players, and I've always felt this, should just get the fuck over complaining about decisions and respect referees a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I think it's become very, very fashionable to pile a lot of pressure on officials.
And I don't think that's a controversial or unpopular opinion.
No, but I don't know. I think maybe because the application of VAR has become so bad that it's become a less controversial opinion. Mm. But if I'd have said a couple of years ago, why are we spending like 4 minutes looking over this? Because I think it's, and if you watch football on television opinion, really, rather than regularly go to the stadium opinion,
but what's
about what a dreadful experience it is for the fans, that maybe getting everything 100% right, which it turns out is actually not possible, is not the most important thing.
Okay.
The problem is,
but you have to implement something. So no one's allowed to write to Pugmal anymore. But you need something a little bit extra here, Andy.
Maybe on a pen pal level.
If a manager mentions VAR in a post match, then like a comedy sort of boxing glove comes out from the side of the thing and just bang and hits him. Something like that.
Or maybe Luke could appear from the sidelines and put a half and half scarf around their neck.
Half and half decision scarf. Some people thought it was a goal. Some people thought it was a foul. There you go. We've got a momentum. Half and half scarf for decisions. My controversial opinion is that Manchester City are completely innocent and they'll prove it.
We'll see if that ages like a fine milk. We've got one from Paddy on the Discord. Who's the strangest famous supporter of your club? Bunk from The Wire supports my local Irish team, St. Pat's. Someone misquoted him about it years ago and just went, he just went with it. There's a video of him somewhere pissed at 3 a.m. in LA celebrating us winning the FAI Cup in 2014. He tweets about games regularly and sent the team a video message before the 2021 FAI Cup final too.
That's good. Brilliant. I love that he's involved.
Paddy's a legend on the Discord. Great to have him involved.
Do you reckon, like Bunk, he celebrates a St. Pat's win with a big cigar?
Yeah, he should do. His real name's Wendell Pierce, we should say. I mean, yes. I don't think he's not actually.
That's the actor, not Paddy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I could give you a quick top five if you want.
Top five?
From Portsmouth. I'll just do a quick rundown.
But it's got to be strange, though.
Okay. Well, okay, do you want the strangest one?
Yeah, go on. We want some strange ones. Okay, so actually, to be fair, actually, Portsmouth, they probably all.
A lot
strange.
Of Pompey fans claim Will Ferrell.
No,
because I think he's friends with the owner and he has been down there.
Oh, he has?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, accept
that's
that.
Like saying Sylvester Stallone's an Everton fan.
He might be.
No, this is
he
more of a link.
He got a shirt once.
See, I was going to say, I bet he's not even been there. He doesn't.
And the great one for Portsmouth fans, of course, it's not as sweet at the moment, but the great one for Portsmouth fans is James Ward-Prowse.
James Ward-Prowse.
Season ticket holder
really?
At Pompey for years. Yeah, yeah.
Huh. Uh-huh.
Before he went out. And the reason, obviously, the great thing about that is you can be a Pompey fan and be smug about that, and then you realise with crushing reality that actually he's only ever playing for Southampton because Pompey's academy is so shit.
True.
So he slipped through a net again. Another one.
Yeah. But I suppose that's not really strange when you think about, as you say, where he grew up and all that. Kind of
I always loved, the one I always love for Portsmouth is Anthony Minghella. Who is director of The English Patient, The Talented Mr.
Ripley,
Cold Mountain.
Yep.
He is he's sadly no longer with us, but his family ran an ice cream business around Portsmouth and the Isle of Wight.
Okay.
And when Portsmouth got promoted to the Premier League back in 2003, they actually achieved it, I think, a game or two before the end of the season, or it was just after they became champions. And the final home game, the local radio station had Anthony Minghella doing co-coms.
Lovely.
Oh,
and you could tell, even though he's won Oscars and stuff, it was like the best day of his life.
That is good.
He was absolutely loving it on the radio.
I do like that.
So Minghella would probably be a good one as well.
It's a shame Jim's not here for Arsenal.
Mm.
Get old
Bin Laden.
Osama.
Yeah, Bin Laden, yeah.
Obviously was an Arsenal fan.
Yeah. He'd turn in his grave at how they bottled it last year, wouldn't he?
Yeah, well, careful. Just in case no one's seen Zero Dark Thirty. Spoilers.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah.
If that's the name of the film, or is it another film? I'm going to say. So there's some obvious ones we know, like Lily Allen, and
Hugh Grant.
But that's not strange, you know. If you think about where he's from and blah blah blah, you look into it. He's got to be like, whoa, didn't see that. There's an M&M link to Fulham.
What
is there?
Yeah, it's very very tenuous. But
I can't have Will Ferrell and you can have Eminem.
No, I'm saying that it's very, very tenuous, but there is some kind of link, but it seems very, very flimsy. So he has been mentioned as a Fulham fan, but, and this is a nice one, on set, Joaquin Phoenix was seen wearing a Fulham scarf.
Very nice.
That's
half
lovely.
And half and half?
No,
no, no, no, it was the full ticket.
Is that one half Fulham, one half Gladiator?
So Joaquin Phoenix, I think, wins the round.
We've only got your word for that, though.
Margot Robbie, because apparently her husband is a Fulham fan.
Ah. Wacky Fitz was once apparently seen wearing a Fulham scarf.
No, you can Google that. It's there.
Okay, right.
It is there.
I mean, with Margot Robbie, it's not such a great leap. She's a famous enjoyer of Clapham Common nightlife, isn't she?
Oh, that's right. In South London, yeah. And then, of course, the late, great Michael Jackson. He was such a fan. They put a statue up in his honour.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The late great, as Marcus calls him.
Yeah.
So, right, I've got to go Great Uncle Bulgaria, Orinoco. Yeah.
There we go.
Not that strange.
You haven't got any,
it?
Really, have you?
Well, I guess Gene Whitfield back in the day.
Who's that?
She was like the old woman Terry in like a lot of sitcoms.
Oh, right.
She was the mum in Absolutely Fabulous.
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough.
It doesn't make it any better.
Surely some, like, you know, like tennis players are fans of Wimbledon.
Well, we had Boris Becker come down for a game against Dagenham and Redbridge.
There you go.
Apparently,
before he got deported.
Apparently,
exactly.
Apparently, Brad Pitt. I've just Googled it.
Really?
Apparently, Brad Pitt. Yeah, and Daniel Craig. Apparently.
Yeah, obviously.
There we go.
There we are. There we are. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble Mailbag, everybody. We're back on Monday with a brand new ramble, of course. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter, TikTok, YouTube and Instagram at Football Ramble, and follow us on Spotify as well.
Yes. Thanks for your questions.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, everybody. We couldn't do this without you. So lots of love and we'll see you on Monday.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.